Welcome to the Campbell Conversations. My guest today is Syracuse Mayor Stephanie Miner. Last week, the mayor delivered the State of the City address, and she also recently announced that she'll be seeking a second term as mayor next fall. She spoke with me last summer, but a lot has happened in Syracuse and in the mayor's office since then, so it's time to have her back. Mayor Miner, welcome to the program.
It's always good to be on. Thank you, Graham.
I've got good news and bad news. The good news is you've been in the New York Times a lot lately. The bad news is that it seems to have started this frenzy of speculation about whether you've had a falling out with the governor and is this a real, you know, problem in some way politically. So I wanted to ask you a couple questions about this pension issue that this disagreement concerns. And first, let me try to summarize the situation very briefly based on part and what you told me the last time we spoke here. And also some things I've read. And if I have something wrong, just correct me. But here's the summary as far as I understand it. Syracuse and other cities have a problem paying their public employee pension benefits because these packages were negotiated earlier when the cities had a healthier tax base and larger populations were there in the city to support them. Now the cities are kind of stuck because the contracts are in place and any efforts to renegotiate the commitments in light of changed fiscal realities can be taken by the unions to binding arbitration in which the city's ability to pay is not necessarily taken into account. The state, however, does have some authority to tinker with these arrangements, and they've done so, for example, with the new employees. And now what the governor is proposing is to allow the cities to lower the rates that they pay in the near future in exchange for paying higher rates and further out years. And you've raised concerns about this, that it may just delay the problem for the cities and actually might make things worse. Do I have that about right?
Well, yes and no.
Okay.
The results about the cities as in plural, inability to pay pensions costs is right, that it is strapping us and sending us all into insolvency. But the cause is different. Pensions and pension benefits are exclusively set and dictated by New York State. So we don't negotiate pension benefits.
And so never did.
Have never done it.
Okay.
So the state sets the pension benefits. The state sets how old you're going to retire. It sets what you contribute or, in most cases, what you do not contribute. And they have given public employees rich benefits. And the market crashed in 2008. And in the year 2000, they gave an extraordinary pension sweetener enhancement, depending on where you stood at the time, where they said if you're in Tier 3 or Tier 4, you don't have to make any contributions. Automatic cost of living and adjustments. And there was one other that's at the top of my head that I testified about. Very rich enhancements. And from the whole history of 2000 to 2009 was the state legislature and the governor voting to increase these benefits. What they did not anticipate or didn't think about was that there was going to be a financial meltdown in 2008. And as a result of that, the markets have not performed as well. Very rich benefits, lots more people getting older and retiring. You've had these explosive pension benefits. So New York State's pension fund is well-funded, unlike any other – virtually any other state in the country, because they have – the pension fund has just sent localities a bill. And now you are getting to the point where localities are on the brink of financial disaster because these pension costs have just escalated astronomically. So in 2000 – the pension bill that the city of Syracuse paid was $2.4 million. Our pension bill next year is going to be approximately $32.5 million. Think of the growth that that represents.
And I guess what I was trying to get at before, and I perhaps phrased this incorrectly, but that when the packages that were originally constructed by the state, there were, I guess I'm assuming, assumptions on the part of the state about what cities would look like if they were going to just hand them the bill. And I guess that's where I was coming from in terms of thinking, here is the population base, here is the tax base of these municipalities. And that's changed dramatically in the last 15, 20 years.
Well, I don't think so. I've done a lot of research and talking to people about this. I don't think that the legislature ever thought about the tax base that would support these benefits. I think they thought about the fact that the investment market was having an extraordinary returns. And so they just thought that that was going to continue ad infinitum and that the investment returns would spin off enough to enhance these benefits. The pensions are the major driver in the case of Syracuse and most other cities of what is driving us towards insolvency. But it is not the only thing. And those things that you just talked about, the dramatic transformation in the financial base of cities is another issue. So, for example, Syracuse used to be a city that had a lot of manufacturing. They paid a lot of property taxes. They had smaller utility bills than other places. Our economy as a country has changed. So we've gone from that heavy manufacturing base to now smaller, lighter manufacturing and services. And those entities don't pay the kind of property taxes that manufacturers traditionally did.
There does seem to be a consensus among the analysts that I've been reading that the next year is going to be a good year for the stock market. Now, we never know for sure, but that seems to be what they're saying. So if that happens, will that take some of the pressure off then?
Not really, because think about the fundamental rule of life, compound interest. The stock the pension fund in their actuarial analysis assumes that they're going to make 7.5%. Mm. They have not made that in a number of years. So when you don't make 7.5%, the next year, you know, you have to pay compound interest on it. So 1 year of good returns doesn't get us out of this.
So you're really far behind is what you're saying.
Yeah.
And then the other thing that you already anticipated in talking about some of the broader trends of manufacturing is it seems to me that the only way this problem, absent the state coming in and just changing the whole thing, the only way it's going to get really fixed or fixable is somehow to bring more people to live into the city and change the ratio of worker to pensioner in some way so that these bills that you have to pay in a sense don't seem as high to the city.
That's one way. I think there are others as well. I mean, I think that if we were able to negotiate some changes for our current workforce, if we were able to, say, have impact fees, so nonprofits, who are some of our biggest growth industries in the city, had to pay for services like police, fire, and trash, that would help. There are a lot of things that can be done. And what I said yesterday in responding to a very similar question is there is no one answer. But I think if we do a little bit on each of the fronts, that will put us in a lot better place than we are right now.
I'm Grant Reher, and I'm speaking with Syracuse Mayor Stephanie Miner. I want to turn to your State of the City address now from last week. And I read the speech, and it seemed to have three main components to it: a pretty specific inventory of development projects and the new buildings that were being built and businesses that were locating, a description of the recent accomplishments of the police department and the police chief, and then a setting forward of a new plan to deal with vacant properties. But you also mentioned something that caught my ear, which was the importance of much longer-term city planning. You mentioned the recent completion of a comprehensive plan through 2040 and invoked some writers on that issue. Could you outline briefly that vision that you have for the next 20 years for the city?
Part of what we had to cut out from the address to try to keep it at a manageable length was in 2007, SUNY ESF professor Emmanuel Carter wrote an op-ed talking about the importance of planning for cities. And he made the argument that one of the reasons that Syracuse is not like Boston or Austin, these other cities, Portland, Oregon, or for that matter, Portland, Maine, is because of a lack of planning. And that successive administrations had ignored or hadn't put planners at a high enough level to help make part of these decisions. I agreed with him. When I became mayor, I instituted a planning department. We have high-level planners and who are part and parcel of all of these high-level decisions that we make. And I believe that the great economic development, the cranes in the air, the building, the innovation that we have going on is largely a result of these very innovative planners working hand in glove with our economic development department, our neighborhood and business development, our housing plan, all of that. But what I found particularly interesting when I went back and read this article was that Emmanuel Carter makes the point. He says, if you put planners in at a high level enough in the city, what you will get is a revitalized downtown, a lakefront that people are interested in, and you will have people pay attention to your housing stock. That was in 2007. In 2010, I became mayor, put a planning department in place, and in 2013, stood up at the State of the City and said, we have accomplished all three of those things.
And I also had some questions that came out of the remarks you made in your speech about the recent police initiatives. You mentioned a new plan, Project Truce, that is going to put special focus on a small number of offenders known to engage in gun violence, the worst offenders with guns. Gun violence is obviously getting a lot of attention recently. We've been talking about it on this program for the last 3 weeks. Is there anything in the new state Gun Control Act that you think is likely to lower gun violence in the city of Syracuse?
Not yet, but the attention alone on the issue of guns and their availability is welcomed. When we look at the guns that are used to commit crimes in the city of Syracuse are from places like Virginia and Ohio, places that have lax gun laws, and people are bringing them up here. But for a long time, the mayors across this country, led by Mayor Menino and Mayor Bloomberg, Mayor Menino from Boston, Mayor Bloomberg, of course, from New York City, have been together as an entity talking about the terrible toll that gun violence takes in cities. And now we're starting to see people pay attention to that. So you have a group of people who have known for a very long time that this is an issue to be addressed. And as democracy and public policy works, we have this opportunity, and I'm glad to see and welcome the attention that state leadership and the federal leadership is putting on these issues.
Well, that leads directly into another question I wanted to ask you about this topic. A couple weeks ago, I had District Attorney Bill Fitzpatrick on the program, and I asked him, what could Syracuse and Onondaga County do on their own, separate from the state or the country, to lower gun violence? And he immediately offered the idea of a handgun buyback program, and he cited that it had been done in the past, and he thought was some success. It seems to make sense. Are there any plans to consider doing that again?
No, we looked at that, and we've looked at it a number of times. And when you look at the statistics and the places that they have been implemented across the country, they don't work. What you have is people turning in old guns that don't work, and you don't get the kind of sustained turnout that you need from that. And so what we think makes a difference are police cameras, which we have. And we have seen, by the way, a dramatic reduction in shots fired where police cameras are. We've seen, when we came into office, we had probably one of the highest level of homicides that the year before. We have stemmed the homicides. What we think that we can do is continue to try to focus on that, relatively speaking, small group of people who commit most of the crimes. And what you have to do, and this is a lesson that Mayor Bloomberg and Ray Kelly and others have taught us, that you take your resources and put them where the crime is occurring. Politically speaking, with a small p, that's very difficult because that means you're saying to neighborhoods sometimes, yeah, you're not going to see a police officer, because if you don't see a police officer, that means you got a strong neighborhood and they're in other places. But everybody wants to see police officers because they, you know, understandably feel like that's a way of recognizing that they've got a strong neighborhood and stability.
It seems like the two of them, the DA and the police chief, have been involved in a long-running, quite public conflict. And it looks at this point, at least from the outside, like some kind of blood feud. Does that, as mayor, worry you in terms of the crime-fighting effectiveness for the city if the two main arms of crime prevention are that much at odds with each other?
Look, I think that it is clearly not optimal, but I will tell you that Frank Fowler is an extraordinary police chief. He has an incredible amount of integrity. I have been every day I'm thankful that he's a police chief, and he is one of my closest advisors. And he will continue to be the police chief as long as I have the ability to make him the police chief. And as you mentioned in your teaser, I've asked the people of the city to reelect me, so I'm hoping that that will be another 4 years.
So to follow up on this, though, the thing that I guess that would concern me is it doesn't seem like there's anybody involved in this that's likely to back down. So how's this going to get resolved if it's a problem? Are you just going to have to wait for one of these folks to leave?
No, I think that we have asked that Frank Fowler is a professional. He will continue to do his job as a professional, and I'm happy with that. And one would hope that the district attorney would act in the same manner.
In case you've just joined us, you're listening to the Campbell Conversations, and I'm talking with Syracuse Mayor Stephanie Miner. Well, let's look nationally here for a bit now. What initiatives that you would anticipate coming in the next 4 years from the Obama administration or from Washington do you think might help the most in Syracuse?
Well, unfortunately, I think that when you talk about initiatives or innovation, none of them are coming from other levels of government. They are coming from cities and moving up through government. What we have seen is that on a local government level, that is where you really have your incubators of innovation and progress and ideas and problem solving. So I think that the equation is actually just the opposite, that the Obama administration and other levels of government are going to look to municipalities to see what works there and then take that and try to expand it on a more systematic level.
There's been some – on that point, then, there's been some writing about how the relationship between the national government and the local governments has changed during the Obama administration. On the one hand, it's been more cooperative than we saw during the Bush administration when states and localities that wanted to do things that administration didn't want to see done were clamped down pretty hard. But there seems to be kind of a reverse image of that going on with the Obama administration, at least in the first term. Do you anticipate if you go out in some direction that doesn't fit what they want to see done, that there'll be some tensions?
Not with the Obama administration. I think what you're missing from the premise of your question is that it is extraordinarily difficult to do when you have the kind of partisan blood feud that you have going on in Washington. When you see the House Republicans doing and acting the way that they are, look, they don't like government. They don't want government. So why would they be supportive of any sort of government initiative? Their basic philosophical premise is that government shouldn't exist. And so they're not going to support government or government innovation or programs or things that may work.
And it looks like some kind of immigration reform compromise is now going to be likely. And that's surprising a lot of folks. Do you think that that would have some kind of effect on Syracuse if what they're talking about now passed the citizenship and that kind of thing goes through?
Absolutely, in particularly among the Latino community that occupies the Near West Side and is growing. We have been very fortunate in the city of Syracuse that we have a burgeoning new American population, largely made up through refugees from Africa and India and East Asia. And what we have found is that they are a tremendous resource. And if we can get them through the gap of the world that they come from and then learning our culture and how we operate. The quicker we can make that gap, that time period, the better off we as a city will be because they buy houses, they are happy to be here, they want to raise their family in peace, they want to contribute, and they're very thankful. Look, that's the American dream, and many of us, our family stories are very similar to that, but it looks a little bit different now. We have been working, in fact, the Bloomberg Philanthropies has a challenge called the Mayor's Challenge. And there were 306 municipalities who submitted a proposal. The winner of this proposal will get $5 million to implement this new and innovative idea. There will be four other winners who will get $1 million. We submitted an idea to have a new American marketplace where we would have the ability of the new Americans to get services but also ply their wares and help them become part of the economy. And so the idea is to help them transition to our economy faster, but also at the same time by doing that, they would help stabilize our neighborhoods in the North Side in particular. So there were 306 or 7 applicants, 307 cities. Syracuse was in one of the top 20. So the team that made up of my administration and Dominic Robinson from the North Side went down. Bloomberg Philanthropies paid for this for an ideas camp, and our final proposal is due on Thursday. You know, so we went from one of 307 to now in the top 20, and we're hoping to be in the top 5.
And one of the other things that when you and I have spoken in the past, you've been extremely positive on is the Say Yes to Education program. The governor's budget proposal has been, I think, criticized by some of the equity and funding folks for not doing more to help districts like Syracuse across the state. So I was curious to hear, 6 more months now of information and evidence, what is your thinking on the Say Yes program? Are you still as positive as you were before? And how will the city deal with this budget if something close to what the governor's proposing is what actually goes through?
I still think it's an extraordinary opportunity that we have, and I think it is up to us as Syracusans to make the most of that opportunity or squander it. And as long as I'm mayor, I'm going to make the most of it.
Is there anything about the way the numbers are coming out that concerns you at all?
Well, of course. But, you know, would I like to make more progress? Would I like the numbers to be better? Absolutely. Would I like to stand up and say, you know, we have 100% graduation rate and 100% test scores? And absolutely. But that's not the reality of what the kind of problem that we have with urban public education and the kind of systemic issues that we're dealing with in schools. So it is a false promise to say that we can turn this thing around overnight, but we can make progress and we are making progress. We'll continue to do that.
And what about the piece of the state budget as far as it goes with education? Your thoughts about that? I mean, most of the attention has been on this pension issue, but I was curious to hear what you made of that.
The pension issue impacts the school districts as well. They have the same pension issues that we have, we being municipalities. And, of course, they're one and the same independent school districts. There is we as a country are going through a dramatic change, and we have to – this is where the rubber meets the road. When are schools going to be places where we pay for employee benefits? Are our cities going to become employee benefit transfer entities, or are they going to become – are they service entities? Does a government exist to provide services, or does a government exist to pay retiree benefits? Those are the kind of choices we're facing.
Well, let me get to the three questions at the end. And since you answered these just a few months ago, I'd like to try something that we do occasionally on the program, and that is ask you to answer them, but to answer them from a different perspective than your own life. So I'd like you to answer these questions from the perspective of the city of Syracuse, if you're game for that.
Sure.
So the first is, what's the title of the chapter of life that the city of Syracuse is currently living?
Rebirth.
Okay. And what is the city's worst trait?
Tolerance of trash.
And third, what achievement in Syracuse's life so far has surprised you the most?
Its ability to be transformative.
That was Syracuse Mayor Stephanie Miner. Mayor Miner, thanks so much for talking with me.
Thank you for having me.
I'm Grant Reher. Join me again next week for more conversations in the public interest on the WRVO stations.